Young adults in the privacy of their own home.
Exactly right.
My point is, Darrell, and this is the danger, you know, you give an inch, it becomes a mile.
That's right.
Through actually the decriminalisation of an act which had been unlawful in this country, that we've actually deposed kings. One king actually had a red-hot poker inserted into his rectum and was deposed by the people when it was discovered that he'd conducted himself in that fashion. It has been repugnant to the people of this island for many, many centuries. When it was decriminalised in the 1960s, it was done on the basis that it would be consenting adults in the privacy of their own home.
And they never stopped there.
And exactly. It's now down to 16-year-olds, and 16-year-olds are now fair game for them. The law was reduced from 18 a couple of years ago to 16, and it's now on the front page of a magazine in your local shop, in your face. You will be exposed to this. You will look at this. You have no choice. If you wish to buy this can of drink or this bag of crisps, you have to look at this as part of the process. That is utterly repugnant.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And you know, again, Mohammed, you know, to try to rewrite people's belief systems in this, I'm not trying to say you don't have freedom to expose your life to things that other people might find degrading, but you don't have a right to expose it to children and families and destroy the fabric of society through the promotion of it. And behind all of it, the music industry, the publishing of pornography, the making of pornography, all Jewish participants throughout that whole system, without exception.
That's right, darling. Anybody, in fact, and there's a logical reason for that, and it's as follows. Anybody adhering to a system of morals, simply by virtue of adhering to a system of morals, could not be involved in the promotion of immorality. It's that simple. If you really are adhering to a moral code of any description, you can't be involved in that, because
that's right.
It's immorality.
That's right. That's right. Now, you know, as we move forward with this battle, and as we come into the autumn months here, Mohammed, I want to shift gears a little bit and go into structure of society and how policing is going to become a very important point of discussion for us and others. The way the police departments have been indoctrinated, both in Britain and America and Australia and Canada and France, they have turned our police departments into, it used to be protect and serve would be on the side of a police car in America. You know, now it's hunt and beat and kick them in the teeth and brutalize and act like the biggest mafia on the block if you're a policeman. And you can see on some of these videos and watch some of these TV programs like Cops and the rest of it that they've filtered down into our mind, where the policemen themselves, you look at some of these guys, they've shaved their heads. Now, what does that remind you of? It reminds you of a racist lunatic. And then you take a look at the size of them, and they're these barrel-chested, weightlifting, look like they're on steroids, and they go, and they're around, they're brutes. They're brutalizing brutes in America. Now, I know that Britain is always a few years behind, and France is always a few years behind America, but that's the flow and direction of both Europe and America. Am I correct in your view?
Oh, yeah, there's been a new approach to so-called policing. It no longer is policing. If you actually look at the meaning of the word police, what we see going on today is not policing, in fact. Policing means to enforce the laws. These people have, in fact, ceased to be policemen in that they now consider themselves beyond the law and are acting unlawfully, committing assaults, grievous bodily harms, and on occasion even murder. Some of the things that we hear about today are so scary. The kind of things like tasers, clearly need taking off these people.
Yes.
The sort of people who are being tasered now, and the basis for the tasering is it's mind-numbing how dim these people must be. They are really, you know, I was reading of a 74-year-old man on the tractor who, because he'd refused to stop his tractor, ended up, who tasers a 74-year-old man? No matter how truculent or difficult he's choosing to be. Can I tell you a story now about my father? My father was a physical training instructor in the British Army. And he was an officer, so a fairly high ranking, just under colour sergeant at one point, and he was always drilling men. And he was brought before his commanding officer at the end of a year. And he asked my father a question. He said, I've looked at your charge sheet for the year, and you've not put a single man on charge. Why is that? And my father replied to him, if I have to put a man on charge, I feel he has beaten me. This is about a battle of wills. The you know, you always get clever so-and-sos in this life, people who give you a smart return. I've done it myself. I'm sure you've done it.
Yeah.
We've all given off-the-cuff remarks to policemen. But the policeman has to understand how to manage those kinds of people. It's a person-to-person role. Historically, it's always been about managing situations. An arrest was always something that British society police were reluctant to do. You know, it's the last port of call, not just because of the admin and the paperwork laziness, but also it's about managing the situation and keeping the police. These days, it looks like when they come out, it's an American football team going out against some kind of an opposition.
That's right.
And the whole, you know, the day's manoeuvres of and policing has been quarterbacked, you know. I've seen police, video of police on the internet now, Darrell, actually stalking a man that was disagreeing with them, rather than letting him walk away. And this guy must have been 20 plus stone, jumped on him from the back, beat him up, took him off, arrested him. I've seen girls who had nothing beaten up with their noses bloody. This isn't policing. There's no intelligence in it. There's no community in it. There's no man management about it. There's the policeman who gets away from the end of a day where he's managed to sort everything out before he goes to court. That's a successful policeman. And, you know, I remember, you know, in the film To Kill a Mockingbird, you know, you have this strange set of affairs in the film, and right at the end, they decide that, you know, the bad guy got what was coming, and so the person who killed him didn't get arrested. It's this idea, you know, that back then a policeman could look at the justice in a situation.
That's right, but to see, you're making an assumption that he had a moral compass that had its bearings. And what we find today is not only has the mainstream lost that compass, lost that moral tether, but we also see that the people who are choosing to be in policing have also lost it even more so, because more often than not, what you find is egomaniacs with inferiority complexes taking themselves into that profession, and you find, you know, and then of course as the rest of society is degrading around us, they don't have the inner strengths and skills to handle a normal circumstance, let alone a world going crazy. The world is going crazy step by step. I mean, we are seeing sickness and illness on every corner of every part of this world. And so policemen who have come from that same stock, who are by their own upbringing damaged goods in their own right, are ill-equipped to handle the degradation of the world that is happening around them. Personally, I could never be a policeman, and I wouldn't choose it as a profession, but in today's crazy world, I would be somebody they would probably like, because, I mean, I don't have patience for people. And it seems like people like myself are being selected for that job. Now, I wouldn't do it because I don't have the patience for people. I wouldn't be able to get in the middle of two people and try to figure out who was right and who was wrong. I would probably give them both a shot in the head and tell them, go to sleep. And for that very reason, I would be the wrong guy. But see, today, they're actually seeking people out that think like that. As a way of as an arbiter in the policing system, it's unbelievable, but that's what they're doing. They don't and they don't want people to think on their own as a policeman. They don't. I don't know, Mohammed. I have a fear that this jackbooted culture that is pervading our policing systems is also going to rear its horrible head in this autumn. And that's why I brought the subject up. I want to know what you think, what you see is on our horizon here, civilly, because I see the unemployment figures are going crazy. The people are losing their benefits. They don't even have the ability now to, I mean, there's no extensions for these people. They've already reached the end of those extensions. We talked about it last time we did a show. What's going to happen to them when there's no food for their families? And, I mean, you know what? What would you resort to if there's no food in your belly and your daughter or son or children or wife are hungry? And that times the millions of people who are falling off these rolls, it's going to get pretty nasty, I think.
Well, I have seen, Dale, that apparently, you know, the middle classes in America, some of the middle classes have now had to approach some of these soup kitchens for
yes.
food. They've reached such levels of desperation.
Yep.
So it's we're way past, shall we say, the people that were seen as subprime candidates for soup kitchens, the kind of people that, may God forgive me for saying this, but well, that people would expect to find in the soup kitchen, shall we say. There is now a better class of client in those establishments. This is beginning to work its way up.
Yeah.
We have to say, well, you know, is it going to get better? Maybe one day, but not under the current leadership. It can never improve under the current leadership. All that they have demonstrated is we've been repeating for the best part of 2 years now down on the French Connection, under the management of these people, it can and will only get worse. It cannot get better. These people will not recover. Instead, what we see is a culture of them looking after themselves, robbing the purses of all these corporations, lining their own nests ready for when things get really hard, rather than actually trying to find solutions for the world that will actually repair what's going on. It's about feather, you know, let's make sure that we're covered ourselves, and make sure that when things get really bad that we've got a stock of cash, a stock of assets, we've got all these things, and in the meantime tell everybody that the worst is over. How many times have we heard them say it's all over, the worst is over, we've got past the worst of it? I've heard it for almost 2 years, Darryl, and at each juncture it's got worse.
Well, you know, here's the thing. The financial side of this is really bad. And here in Britain, let's go to Britain for a second here. This openly homosexual right-hand man to Rothschild who runs Britain, who everybody thinks the pedophile Gordon Brown runs Britain, but that's not true. A guy named Mendelsohn does. He's been in out of politics as many times as he's been in a revolving door over there. He comes in and takes over stuff until he has to leave for all kinds of shenanigans, and sometimes it's theft, sometimes it's perversions, sometimes it's just outright outlandish behavior. But Mendelsohn is in Corfu, in the Aegean over there off of Greece, in a Rothschild mansion running Britain from afar. That's what's going on right now.
It reminds me of the Bush years, you know, down where they go to see Bush, who'd spend
spent his first 2 years in office in Texas playing golf and going horse riding and hunting, and they actually had to ask him if he was going to do any work at some point. We actually have a ridiculous situation in the UK in that there are 16 senior members of government who, you know, at least one of them should be in control. We don't have a single one of them in the country at the moment, apart from Gordon Brown, who is also on holiday. Not one of the senior leadership, not one member of the cabinet is actually working at the over this weekend. There is nobody leading this country at all this weekend, and Mandelson has just been given a brand new job, which he is. I've forgotten the title of it now, but it means that he's in charge of the day-to-day affairs, i.e. he has to be there for the day-to-day running. And having just been given that job last week, he's elected to have a holiday rather than actually start the day-to-day running of the government. So, God forbid any emergency occurred yesterday or would occur today, there is actually nobody senior to step in and manage the situation.
Well, I mean, you know, the Isle of Corfu, there is a Rothschild mansion there, but let's go back in history a bit here, maybe to about 16 months ago, when the midget over here that runs France there, Nicolas Sarkozy, took his entourage and family over to America for a nice little powwow with the Bushies up in this is when George was still leading the pack over there, and they went to a big huge mansion in New Hampshire or Vermont, I'm not sure, New Hampshire or Vermont. Lo and behold, it's an owned house by Rothschild up in the Green Mountain area, and he stayed for free there, and it was just this huge Rothschild mansion. Now what we've got is Mendelssohn staying in one of Rothschild's mansions over in Corfu. You know, you can't make this stuff up. It's true. It's happening. It's real. And, of course, nobody's reporting any of this except for, you know, some of the fringe people who keep their eye on the ball. I've put it up on the website if anybody wants to read it. But, Mohammed, you know what? We are in such big trouble if these people are successful. We need really to get off our backsides here. You know how much time I put into this, Mohammed. What more could I possibly do to help this thing be exposed? I sometimes feel so frustrated that it's not growing faster.
Indeed, we do have issues, but I think that, you know, there are some signals out there that there is a sea change. And that means a very substantial change, and one of those, the different things that we have to be able to plug together, and together they give us an image. You can sense it on the wind that something is going on now, but what we actually have is very interesting. The first bit of important news on this is, of course, Mr. Murdoch announcing that his News Corporation has posted a $4.3 billion loss for the last 12 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's best part of 3 million quid. So, 3 billion quid, rather. So, I mean, massive loss. And what he's saying now is that the only way that he's going to try and make a turnaround is to make all of his internet offerings pay-as-you-go only. So if you want to read any of the Fox News or Times Online or any of the stuff that his group owns, you're going to be paying for that in 12 months' time. That is what he sees as a solution. I'm not going to comment on the corporate value of whether that's a good solution or not. I think that's irrelevant. What is important is that it means, Darrell, two things. One, his circulation numbers are down chronically, absolutely chronically, as are his advertising revenues, because the big corporations who place adverts with him must be saying, this guy's numbers are down, we don't know how much because he's not telling us, but we don't think it's cost effective to place adverts with him. Maybe they're running campaigns that 5 years ago they got a certain level of response from, now they've got measurably less response, and so they're pulling their budgets.
Yep.
So they've worked it out that way.
Yep.
But this announcement, he's now gone out and told anyone who's ever advertised with him, hey,
don't advertise with me. This is the big shot through his own foot that he hasn't realized by making this statement. He's saying, don't advertise with me. My circulation numbers, my viewer numbers are far lower than everybody thinks. So people are switching off. And why is that, Dal? Well, we'll come to the why in a second. Another important development that's been reported in the UK press this week is the fact that a large number of over 60s or 65s, and almost 100% of them, now have switched off British TV, terrestrial TV.
Yep.
They are not watching the BBC or any of the... It's been attributed to several things. One is the foul language, another is the violence, and the third is repeats. But the point is, these people have switched off their TV sets. And what we've got now are lots of blue-rinsed, grey-haired old ladies and elderly gentlemen now going down to look at this internet thing for the first time ever in their lives, and found an alternative avenues for news. It doesn't mean that they've come to the French Connection, but what both of these phenomena are telling us, Darren, is there's a bit of a reverse Timothy Leary going on, which is turn off as opposed to turn
on. Yeah, some people are returning from the Twilight Zone, not going toward it.
Exactly. Turn off, drop out. That's what's going on. So this is the first step. It means that those hooks and tentacles, which are referred to in the protocols of we will control everybody, the media, that's slipping at a faster and greater rate. And the point is, once these people, we know from the nature of human behavior on the internet and what we've seen already, these people will start by looking at alternative things on the internet to suit their own fancies and whims, maybe, to start with. But at some point, they will start to come across further information. And I think that one of the main reasons that people have turned off News Corp International and Fox News is they're faced with two things, a phenomenon you yourself described in looking at some of the British papers, where they read one article which is fantastically written and clearly authentic and accurate in every case and in every element, and then the next bit is just the biggest bunch of bunkum that you've ever seen in your life,
which makes you question whether the last thing you read, which may well have been accurate, is a bunch of bollocks as well, because all of a sudden you're getting this duality of lie and fantasy on the same front page, and then you take a look at the publication itself and say they're claiming credibility here where I don't see it. Now, you know, just 10 years ago, you may not have liked the bent put on a lot of news stories, because one might have been too open, openly, you know, one way or another, but they often would discuss the facts. Now, you get this diet of nonsense, like the fact that Al-Qaeda is here or there, and everyone in my circles knows Al-Qaeda is a lie, and so do many, many more people than I think are being, that I even know. I think just about everybody knows this Al-Qaeda thing is a nonsense. But you'll find the word Al-Qaeda and the blame going toward Al-Qaeda in almost every article coming out of the mainstream, and everyone knows that's a lie.
Yes, indeed, Darren, and I think because people are beginning to understand that the mainstream media have been acting as mouthpieces rather than critics, objective critics, I don't mean criticism in the negative sense, but even objective criticism of just saying, well, hang on a minute, we're testing the validity of this statement or that statement. No, they have foisted it upon people, and I think there's a degree of anger and resentment now. Not only are people turning off, but they're going and saying, hey, I've always thought there was something dodgy about this Al-Qaeda. I'd never heard of it before. It appeared out of nowhere as a claim. No Muslim had ever claimed to have been under this term. Bin Laden had never referred to himself as a member or leader of Bin Laden of Al-Qaeda before the term was coined by the FBI. People are waking up to the nonsense. Another very important story here in the UK, Darryl, has been the murder of Dr. David Kelly.
Yeah.
On the French Connection, we nailed it as murder on day one.
That's right.
We've said from day one, this is murder.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. He has been assassinated by somebody who we're not 100%. Why? We're not 100%. But the fact, it's there. There are so many people down in the UK who are aware of the suspicious circumstances of his death that now the mainstream media, the Daily Mail, all these people who've turned off, dropped out, they're now looking on the internet, they're seeing the evidence, and this is an issue where they're turning around and saying, why have I been lied to so much by the papers? It's a one-way street. You know what you say about the cucumber, Darryl?
Yeah.
No, once they've realized they've been deceived, they're not coming back, Mr. Murdoch.
Well, that's right. And Muhammad, you know, people see, once you've been able to suspend your disbelief and grab the truth in one story, the next leap of faith into the next deception that you're going to have to deal with becomes easier. And once they realize, because your faith and trust that you once had in your government gets shaken more and more with every new disclosure, it comes to the point where you can start seeing through the deception almost at will. I look at something now and I can smell a rat as soon as I'm into the first paragraph. Whereas when I started out, that certainly wasn't the case. But it comes from moving farther and farther away from being in that fog, that false lie factory that these people have built, and it's crumbling. It has crumbled completely for me, for you, for Noel, for so many others. Here's the thing. They want to replace it, Muhammad, with people like the Pied Piper of America over there. Now he's dressing up as the Joker and acting the fool, Alex Jones. Or they want to use more sophisticated means and do things with people like Rivero, who moves you away from the important issues of the day by giving you enough truth to hang you with. And I don't trust that guy as far as I can throw him, but there are others. You know, this guy, Michelle Shaw Sadovsky, by and large, tells a lot of facts, but will never allow on his website the facts to go towards Zionism or criminal Judaism. And so he drops you short as well. And I'm going to tell you, our site, the French Connection site, one that you've participated in liberally over the last few years, is in a pitched battle with these forces to try and wrestle the message away from them and into our camp. And we cannot do it alone.
Darryl, I don't normally discuss the behind the scenes stuff, but I'd like you to indulge me on a particular issue that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And I may discuss some of the other behind the scenes things with Noel. Noel was asking me to maybe do some things with him, and I can discuss things that are part of our procedures. But something that I've personally witnessed, and something I want to say very strongly now in support of what we're doing, it's very important, this, Darryl. I have, over the years, seen you on the phone and spoken with you privately, that you've been on the phone to this person or that person or another person. I want the listeners out there to understand this. You have been flatly refused by hundreds of potential interviewees who wouldn't come on the French Connection after they've looked at the site, seen the subject matter, and seen that we've fingered Zionism. There are literally hundreds of people who've refused that opportunity.
Yep.
Now, they will all be jumping on the bandwagon, because I'll tell you something, Darryl. Alex Jones, his days are sorely numbered, and I think that they are few in number too. I've been reading comments on the internet now, from people
who maybe are looking at one story or another story. And one guy sums it all up very nicely. He said he'd always seen the Jewish community as a benign religious group.
Yep.
That weren't really doing anything evil in the world and probably did some charity stuff and, you know, were innocuous,
yep.
Mainly innocuous. But he said their last incursion into Palestine and the Bernie Madoff affair and this organ donor and money laundering scam which is going on has totally changed his view of them, and he said he's actually grown as a result of these three events alone to hate the Jews because they're obviously as evil as anybody that he's ever come across as far as he's concerned, and he likens them to a particular group. So this is a guy who a year ago, if we'd have tried to get him interested in what was going on in the French Connection, his interest would have been zero. He'd have thought we were crazy.
Yeah.
But these people are all being primed. They're being primed into, hey, these aren't good guys. So that means once people have reached that stage, this is the cucumber and the pickle again,
yep.
There's no going back. And also it means that for the first time, that person potentially can accept the kind of material and the kind of work which you and the French Connection have been doing for the last 4 years.
Well, you know, I remember clearly this guy, Paul Craig Roberts, he was an economics advisor in a very high position within the Reagan administration. The guy was a big guest on Alex Jones. He no longer shows up there very often, if at all, because, of course, he now is screaming to the top of his lungs that the Jews in Israel are behind many of our problems, if not all of them. And when I had him on the French Connection, unbeknownst to him, he hadn't checked the site first. I tried to corner him on some information about the participation of Zionist Jews within the government, and this guy ran from me like his hair was on fire. And then about a month to 2 months ago, he started writing articles which were lambasting these crooks, and you could tell the guy was genuinely interested in outing them. So what had happened was he himself had a sea change in his understanding of who the real bad guys were. I wrote him a letter and said, you know, you made me the fool on my show for what now you realize was the truth. And I said to him that you owe me an apology, Paul Craig Roberts.